The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, The Weekend Podcast, joined by Peter and Stephen. You all right, lads?
Hello.
Hello.
And, do you know what? I know I'm sick of saying it, but a week in stocks is a long time, isn't it?
It is. And this week I've been very, very busy with everything else, like work-wise, not stocks. All I've been doing is kind of glancing at it and going, blimey, that's a lot of red. And then I just haven't really had a chance to do anything, or I don't know what I would do anyway. So I've just been kind of a casual observer. But it's been pretty scary at times, isn't it, in terms of how much how much stocks can suddenly drop in value.
Yeah, Steve, what's your observation?
Well, they pull back a little bit, and it's quite scary. Yeah, to see, I'm actually really pleased with my portfolio at the moment. But actually, a week ago, it was a lot higher. But it's just the fact that it's gone up a bit, and it hasn't continued to lose every single day. So
I'm a big fan of a pullback. Are you?
Indeed.
But no, listen, there's a spreadsheet out there, right? It's been done by some kind of number cruncher somewhere. But some of the biggest ever gains are off some of the biggest sell-offs. So that saying about, timing the market beats trying to time the market, that's why. Because when people start to sell and panic and get out of the market and then get worried, they don't get back in for the whipsaw. And they say the market's about fear and greed, and it's true. And a lot of it is, it's about fear on both sides. So, first of all, you get the fear of losing money. So people, see days and days and days of sales, so they just sell off. And then, what happens then, they get the fear of missing out when you get that rebound. And the rebound, so everyone just piles back in. And the rebound is often, stronger because people want stocks to go up generally. They don't want stocks to go down. So the feelings are all there. So people are just piling and people sort of know these whipsaws happen. But that's why it's good to, if anything, it's good to have some cash on the side always and take advantage of the sell-off. Because it's like Black Friday, go in and go crazy, you should do, really.
But the thing is, it's that thing of, short averaging down or whatever, but then you're like, where is the bottom going to be? And then...
In your pants!
Yeah, there it is. Like I said, this week I've just had a particularly hectic week not looking at stocks. And even if I had loads of time in my hands, I don't know what would I have done. Yeah, average down on a few of these because I have a little bit of cash. But then you still feel like I'm is it throwing good money after bad? I don't know.
But then when you say about averaging down, you could have averaged down a few weeks ago. And it went down even further. Then is the point?
Your gain would have been faster then. Gone back to even faster if you were down or something. But look, last 2 days have been excellent in the stock market, really buoyant. And is it very odd how the last 2 days are the 1st and 2nd of November? October is the most volatile month traditionally in the calendar. It's traditionally a very volatile month, and all the biggest events happen pretty much in October. Black Friday happened when there that big massive sell off, and the I don't know what happened. We left the EU or something that years ago. No, what do we leave?
Wasn't it Black Monday? Black Tuesday?
Peter. Don't be racist, okay?
Okay, no. I think Black Friday is a retail thing at the
start.
That's
it. It was Black Monday. Yes, it was Black Monday. When we left the ERM. No, we left the ERM. That's it. They kept trying to raise interest rates to keep up. And George Soros made like $8 billion in a day betting against the Bank of England.
It was Black Wednesday.
Black Wednesday, that's it. It's because a lot of black days going on. It's dark.
I thought Black Monday doesn't sound right.
Yeah, so someone will.
That was some weird event you went to.
Yeah. But anyway,
1992. There you go.
Everything has happened off the top of your head. That wasn't it. Everything has happened in October, pretty much. Any bad event, and what you have is this psychological factor that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in October. So all these worries that are built up around, the trade deals and interest rates going up and Brexit, all of a sudden, come manifest in themselves in October, And then also, it was very odd. I was saying today, talking about on the podcast with Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell. I was saying to him that isn't it very odd how today or Friday, we're talking about Friday, Trump made a very long and very good phone call to President Xi Jinping of China. It was very long, very good. I like the word very long. Yeah, so, why does he put that in there? He makes himself sound simple, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the time. I mean, what was the thing? The other week, with Saudi Arabia, wasn't he? He was like, "Yeah, we buy a lot of things. We buy $300 million of things. You know, he's like, rather than saying munitions or whatever, you know, no, he doesn't go into big stuff and things because
he's an intelligent man.
That's right. Is he your hero, Steve?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
but it's amazing the effect he has on the market.
Well, I said that was do you know what? Listen, the thing is that I said that's the biggest pump I've ever seen, a Trump pump, yeah, that was, exactly. Because the midterms are coming out. He has to get, you know, he's championed himself on the stock market being the highest ever. We've had the most fantastic numbers in employment. People are more people, jobs. Things are big, long. Things are getting taller and fatter. And the market is very high. It's very high. And so he's been chapping himself on that. And now the market's done a massive sell-off just before his midterm elections, you know, where, you know, he could lose the House, the support of the House and stuff. And all of a sudden, he's had a very long and good conversation with Xi Jinping. I don't know if he speaks Chinese. Is he, Trump?
I did wonder what language do they speak. Yeah, probably.
That's why it's long, because there's a translator in the middle, probably. I'm looking at my stocks this morning. I have three stocks now up Friday, up by double digit percentages. Woo-hoo. Up! You know?
Wow.
That's totally. Yeah. Oriol.
They changed their broker, didn't they?
Yeah, well, listen, Calico Genuity, right, are a big broker. Most of the stocks we hold couldn't wish to have Canaccord as a broker. They are like, you know, a multi-billion dollar company. I think they're based in Canada, actually, but they're massive. They're global. And so they've joined. And everyone says, oh, when they announce a joint brokers, placing is coming. No, it's not necessarily the case. If you are going up a league to brokers, they can help you with all kinds of things, from in-depth research to specialist knowledge, all that kind of stuff. You can be in contact with lots of people. I mean, they can do fundraising. Of course they can. But they've got contacts everywhere in the city. They can they can bring institutional investors on board, you know, all that stuff. They can show up the register there. So it's all good stuff for a broker. So see, it's good news. And, you know, the interims, I see a lot of people on Twitter saying, you know, I wouldn't want to be out of this over the weekend. But truly, you know, you can say that. You can say that about it's one of the biggest pump and ramp things you can say. But yes. With Totally, you can say that because at 7 a.m. on Monday morning, they will be releasing their interims. And they had a positive sort of trading update last week. And they've been sold down massively by institutional investors. So hopefully now Canaccord will help, shore up the register and stop this selling. And I think it's nearly out anyway. I've got a spreadsheet. Every day, update the spreadsheet. Look at the buy, sells, and see how much is left, how much stock is left for these institutional sales. And once they're out, it should rally. So, but anyway, I've got that up 12%. I've got Oriol Resources. Did you have a tickle of those or not?
I did not, no.
Steve, did you have a tickle?
No, I didn't. I only tickle in the ones that go down.
And yeah, that's it. maybe that's why they're going. Weird. Maybe that's why they're going down, Steve.
Yeah. Okay.
If you started tickling me, I'd sort of crouch. I'd sort of bend over as well, to be honest.
I just heard that out loud. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. There we go.
that's
good. Yeah, anyway, where were we?
I talked to you about Brave Bison Group, didn't I, a while back? And
do email or something. No, what is it? Video.
Yeah, they do video. They do. They help companies. They produce video. They help them sort of, leverage their video content across YouTube, Facebook, and all that stuff, and obviously get paid money for that, and also advertising and all that stuff. But I mean, they come up with. I released a video. You two didn't watch the video, did you? You know, what's the point?
This week, I haven't done anything other than work, but I will watch it at the weekend. Was it this week?
Yes, last night actually, Thursday night. But I talk about Brave. I talk about Brave Bison. I talk about spikes, and I say avoid spikes in a stock. Spikes when a price goes up crazy, you know, off news. Sometimes it doesn't on small cap stocks. It can go up off nothing, you know. But I often say a spike is almost like a flag to say, you know, look into this company, because if it's off news, look at the news. If it's substantial news, put it on your watch list. You know, put a price alert on it, so it alerts you again. But, I mean, I think with Brave Bison, they've got two bits of news which spiked the share price. One of them was they were in the top five biggest publishers by views in the world, right? So there's stuff they're posting. I thought, wow, that's amazing. So literally, I had 1.7 billion sort of views on Facebook with some of the stuff they're publishing. And then they came down the spike. Then deal with Tencent. Tencent is one of the biggest Chinese companies, internet companies in the world. It owns WeChat. It's a payment and chat, you know, sort of portal. It's the biggest in China, so it's massive, and it's hard to get access to the Chinese markets, you know. And even Facebook can't get in China.
Yeah.
But so now they're in there,
and
so
Trump's quite close to them now.
Yeah, Trump.
Yeah, there we go.
But he was, trade tariff. you're not put more tariff on us.
Yeah.
Okay,
long
man.
Long phone call. Why you phone long time?
Yeah, about time you call now, isn't it? We are suffering. See our stock market? See your stock market? Yours is up, ours is down. Trump tariff. Anyway, so that was, That was just the translator. that's before Xi Jinping said anything.
What power those translators have, though?
I know, exactly.
Yes, yeah. He say you're fat.
Yeah. Tell Trump he's a fat sod. Mr. Trump, he really like your golden hair.
Right, yeah. sorry. Anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So, brave bison, quite brave.
So anyway, and then that spike up, spike come down and flattened. There is a seller in there, Invesco, and that was what flattened the price. Invesco held about 70% of the stock. They're down to 14%. I don't know if they're selling any more, but also the new CEO in there, Claire Hungate, and she's good at hanging gates, but also she's good at trimming the expenses, because the revenue has pretty much stayed pretty much the same, but the losses have come down from 2.1 million, which was last half year, to 400,000. In the recent half year, and they've still got 4 million in cash. So I'm saying they're not going to burn through that much cash, that much, but the market cap is about, what, I think about 9 million, and they've got 4 million in cash, and they're turning around to become a profitable company. It's been a perennial disappointer. Neil Woodford, star fund manager, managed to invest at the top. He's still holding on. He managed to invest, a star fund manager? Laughing, yeah? Hang on. But he is taking a hammering on so many stocks, unbelievable. But
he seems to, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. BBS.
He must be down for the year, mustn't he?
Yeah.
I don't really follow his.
He owns a big chunk of stock. About 60% of the stock is well held. But he invested at about something ridiculous. Well, it wasn't called Brave Bison. It was like 70 pence when he invested in them. You know, 1.6 pence.
Wow.
So that's the star fund manager. By the top, hold to the bottom. Yeah.
That just says everything, doesn't it, really? I don't know. It's a hard, this market is a hard one to win in, and it's a very hard game, isn't it? What do you think?
Well, do you know what? I think, I just think, to a certain extent, I think Neil, I have no idea about this, but I think he believed the hype, you know, Neil believed the hype about himself, because he was in Jupiter Asset Management, done really well there, he was a star guy there, then he decided to set up his own fund. And this is the equivalent, first analogy of the podcast, this is the equivalent of being in a boy band, you know, and then being called the actual, you know, the talented one, and then leaving, going solo, and having no hits. And then, that wasn't a good thing.
Well, like Gary Barlow.
Yeah, but like that. That's what Neil Woodford did, you know? So, you're championed as the one with the talent, and you're on your own, you find out, in fact, this is harder than I thought.
But isn't it a fact that 95% of the fund managers don't beat the market? So you're better off, if you were just looking to invest in funds, you might as well just put in a passive tracker and off you go.
Yeah, I think it's 96%.
Oh, sorry. I'm way out.
But do you know what the thing is? Some of them beat the market, but the ones that do charge the amount to take that advantage away. So there's no point in it. So you're better off going for Vanguard or something like that, and sort of a passive tracker. But do you know what? It's almost like wait until there's a bear market, whack all your money in a tracker like crazy, you know, a decent tracker, and just leave it, because then over the years you'll do quite well. It's as simple as that.
I know what I was going to ask about the whole the week and averaging down and all that stuff is that unless you've got a vast quantity of cash to dispose of, you're not going to be able to average down on all your stocks in a week like this where perhaps a lot of them have taken a tumble. And the thing is, the challenge then is picking the ones that will bounce, isn't it? And that's pretty difficult. That's where I would be if I had time this week. I'd be looking at my 20 stocks going, well, they're all red, but where should I put my, you know, I can perhaps afford to average down in about four or five of them, but which four or five? And how do you do that? That's a challenge.
Well, the ones generally that have fallen the hardest, I think. But another one, the ones that, first and foremost, in this market, you've got to make sure, and you should do this before you invest in a company anyway, but you've got to make sure if they're pre-revenue stocks, they have cash. You know, if they're loss-making, they have plenty of cash. Because you find the stocks that fall the hardest, the ones that are overvalued, and or don't have enough cash, need to raise. And if they're both that, if they're overvalued and need to raise money, they're in big trouble because they'll fall massively, or they have to. I mean, I've talked to people, and a lot of them said they won't even attempt to raise money in this kind of market at the moment because it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. They just get slapped in the face or laughed at, or it'd be like, you know, 50% discount.
Also feel like it wouldn't be worth releasing good news in this market because it would just be like met with a bit of a muted response.
Well, not only that, people were selling into the good news. So there were people, there was people panicking about their stocks in their portfolio bleeding every day, you know, blood just on the floor. And so they couldn't really sell, you know, they did have a massive discount. But then you'd get a decent bit of news come out, and so they'd sell straight away on the bell and pretty much say, right, let's get out of this stock because they're scared of the market, you know. So, as
someone who has more time on their hands in terms, well, because you're doing this day to day as your job, basically, how have you approached this week? What have you done? Anything? Have you averaged down much? Have you?
Well, I don't know if you remember several podcasts ago. I had the foresight to get into cash, didn't I?
Yeah, and then you got out of cash.
That's why I get into cash, though. I get into cash because
you were 40% in cash, and then you went down to about 10%.
I've never been 40% in cash in all my life. For a couple of years, at least 4 or 5 years. But no, there's 40% in cash going from almost 100% invested to 40%. It's a lot, you know. So I was 40, oh, a bit more than that actually. But then I started buying back in when they started having all these blood leaching on the floor, and I started buying back. I sold at the top, bought the bottom, boys. Hey, come on! Let's have a bit of credit here. That's what I did. Go back, listen to the previous podcast. I said I'm in cash, big time, and that's when the market was flying.
Right, and then you then invested, and it's fallen since then. Since you've gone.
I can't time the market perfectly, Peter.
Yeah, okay, so this week you haven't actually done much. You've sat and watched as well.
I bought. I've been buying. I bought a few couple of stocks.
Right, yeah. Like what?
Like Primoris Investments.
Share with the group.
Primoris Investments I bought.
Okay.
I don't like investment companies. I'll tell you why. They're an investment company.
bought them, but you don't
no,
like
No, I know, but listen a second. So people said to me, right, they recommend a couple of investment companies. I said, no, there's no point. There's no point. Because say an investment company invests in about 10 companies, you know? So say they'll have about 10% of their portfolio exposure to any one. That's quite high. Most of them don't even have that. Most of them have 3, 4% you know, exposure to a company. So let's say they're investing in, to keep it easy, let's say they have 10% exposure to a good company, you know, that has decent potential, you know? So, and you buy into that investment company and you say, you know, put 10% of your portfolio in that company. You're getting, in fact, you know, you're getting 10% of 10%. That's 1% exposure to that company you want to invest in. So there may only be, you know, not every company in that investment company's portfolio is going to be good, a hot rocket stock, you know. But hopefully, you know, a few of them will be. So even if that company, you know, goes up by, you know, doubles, so the company they invested in doubles, you know, so you've now got 10% of 20%, which is 2%. That's your exposure. It's just hard work. The leveraging doesn't really work, you know. Yeah. So if you can get decent, you know, direct exposure to a company you like, do it. Yeah. But Primoris, first and foremost, they were valued. They're valued at, what are they? Let me just look at them. Let me just check.
But that's like, you know, investing in a fund, isn't it? Fund and going, go on then, Neil, do your best. All right, 70p down to 1p. Well done.
Yeah, because I see myself as an investor anyway, so I don't need other people to invest for me, you know. But Primoris, right, they're 3.9 million market cap. The sum of their investments is worth more than their actual market cap for a start, which is not unusual anyway, because, like I said, you've got this, there's a disconnect sometimes between net asset value of a company, of an investment company, and the share prices. Normally, the net asset value should be at a premium. But anyway, one of the investments they have are UK oil and gas. Oddly, they're in tech and oil and gas. I don't know why they're, but it seems to work for them. I quite like the guy, Alistair Clayton, who's the executive director. He owns 3% of Primoris, so he's got to skin the game. But they've invested in this company. First of all, they got £1 million in UK oil and gas, which is they got £375 in cash and all the shares. But anyway, there's a company called Engage Technologies, right? And it's their biggest investment. They've put £1.4 million into it, and that for a £4 million company is quite a big chunk. But they invested in this company the last couple of years. Engage Technologies, just do a search for them, right, and go to the blog site of their website. They are going nuts, gangbusters. They are basically software as a service, cloud-based system that deals with everything from recruitment to payrolls, everything to invoicing, anything, right? And it's seamless, apparently. And they're IPOing next year. Even the broker who's IPOing them is now using their system, right? One of the biggest burger chains in the country is using them. They've got blue-chip clients stacking up. And the guy said, if you look at he did an interview with the CEO called Howard Hughes, the guys of Engage. He said, it's gone berserk of late. He said, we were doing like a couple of deals every other couple of days. Now we're doing 6 deals every 2 days. And he said, we're walking on the high street from where we're based in London, and we're counting the high street shops. Pretty much every other high street shop are using us now. I think they'll be taken out. They're going to be massive. He's hoping to get $100 million valuation by the end of the year. And he said, the way we're selling it, it could be that case. So it's almost like it's going nuts. If I could get direct investment in that company, I would. Engage technologies, but I can't. But I think it's going to be taken out by a company. A bigger software company is going to take it out because it's doing so well. So that's what I like about Prim, and it's got cash, and and like I said, it's at an all time low. All the directors hold skin in the game, and I was buying above below where they bought. They bought a lot higher up, so I quite like that. And but have a look at Engage. It's one of those companies that they can't. They can't expand fast enough. Everyone wants their software, and they're finding it at the moment really hard expanding that fast. So all they need to do is raise funds to get more people to help them. But I think they'll be taken out. That's why I like them. So, but generally, I don't like investment companies.
Okay. So your prime reason for investing in them is because of their investment in Engage.
There's some other. I haven't really looked into the others. I just read about that and read up on it and read just where Prim is on the chart. I mean, it's really at a low. And and like I said, I think Engage are going to be releasing news. I think soon on update, or they're going to be about IPOing. So obviously, when you go to an IPO as well, there's the valuation goes up, and there's I wonder if Prim will follow their investment there, because they don't want to be diluted too much. They will be diluted. That's the trouble when you float. Yeah. You get diluted as well, but. It's one of the things. It's a business you'd love to have. You can't literally. They can't expand fast enough. People want to see their product and they want it straight away.
It's a
lovely position to be in. One of those, they've cracked
yes.
it. Yes. And it comes from this guy, the Howard, who's the CEO, is behind the company. It's a nice story. He was told he was in this sort of field. He's worked for big companies, and one of the companies asked him to sort something out. And he looked around, he realised there wasn't any software like this that could deal with all this background, sort of back office, pain the backside stuff like recruitment and checking. And he said, and so I came up with the system. And I sort of, it was a problem. And I thought the solution to a problem. But anyway, I like that. Yeah. Anything else worth chatting about?
I got to talk about BT, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Wow.
Oh,
it's gone nuts, isn't it? But apparently it's going to spin out. So it's back to a break. I had the missus texting me, right? So it's odd. This is about psychology, this is. Because when you're down and stock, right? She talked to me about BT a bit now and again, nagged me about it. But now it's getting close to break even. She's nagging me more. So on the day, it went up, I released his half-year results. So earnings per share is up by 29%. Pre-tax profit is up by sort of 24%, or other way around, I think. But CEO, outgoing CEO, a new CEO coming in, everything's happening, and yet, on the day, I heard the break even is 268, and it did hit 268 on Wednesday, I think.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm going to sell. I said, no, don't. Why? It's a turnaround business. It's uptrend now. We're now, I said, three on the chart. I said, look, it's a golden cross. That means 50-day moving average crossing the 200-day moving average. There's a gap up above a previous resistance level, and it also is above that resistance level. I said, this is a really bullish on the chart. It's starting an uptrend. This could be uptrending now because a big company like this for several years. But it's almost like this is one of the biggest mistakes a private investor make. They buy a share, they're sitting on a loss, they wait for it to get back to break even, they sell.
Yeah.
And apparently that's one of the most common things, mistakes, because the loss hurts them so much, they just want to get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't hold for a profit. You know, that's you know, what's the whole point of investing?
That
what's that?
Yeah. I think Steve said, I think you've been there before. Yeah. The thing I thought with BT was that, I mean, good, some sort of solid results. It's still going to be a long, slow crawl up, isn't it?
Yes.
From here. But it's showing the right kind of, or making the right kind of noise. So that's good.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah.
But, well, do you know what? It's odd that I think the CEO has said in an interview afterwards as well that he's no way the new CEO can kitchen sink it, because apparently the new CEO takes up his position after the next quarterly report. So, but Gavin Peterson is quite. What happens if you've got a company,
Gavin Patterson.
Gavin Patterson, yeah. What happens if a new CEO comes on board? What they'll do is try and find all the bad news, blame it on the last CEO, and get it out there. So the biggest loss is often recorded on the day. In fact, the new CEO reports and he's in a new report, and the quarter report comes out. But they'll try and get all the bad news out, all the losses, and blame it on the previous CEO, you know? But Gavin Patterson apparently said there's no way he could do that, kitchen sink it, because the company's in turnaround. It's already looking better. So that was also good news. There was also rumour about there's a big investor, Greenlight, in BT, that apparently is putting pressure on them to spin off Openreach. But I think if you look at the chart there, follows the fundamentals, it's changing around. We're in a positive uptrend here, you know?
Yeah. But are we looking for 10% and then getting out, or are you going to... You know, sort of see if we can push on through. A long-term hold for you, now.
So you're breaking up there on your dodgy broadband. What is the broadband you've got?
That's the dial-up. It's BT.
Yeah, there we are. That's my concern.
Are you looking to go just to get out at 10% for the experiment, or are you going to take some of it out at 10% and leave? Are you going to look at it as a long-term hold?
No, I think I'll get out 10%, and I think I'll just go into trying to find companies, you know, maybe smaller cap and do bigger percentages, because these big companies take so long.
Yes.
And, in fact, we're in way too early probably, but I mean, it takes so long, don't they? Absolutely, literally, you could be dead before you get the return. But I suppose that's a long-term investor.
If you'd bought it at like 2.15 a couple of months ago, you'd be quite sort of happy with 2.60 now.
Like the chairman did, he bought it in £2.02.
He knew something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
He got down to two. Yeah, it did. That was pretty much the bottom, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of other stocks I've bought, but I've bought in. I'm not happy with the prices I've bought in. Do you know what I've done? I didn't want to. I've taken footholds in two companies that I'm not happy with at the moment. The ship, I think, it's going to come back a bit, but I put a little bit in, tiny bit, you know, small bit. This sort of sell-off, if anything, has realised that I need to be a lot more patient about investing. Right. I need to get in smaller, because there's always opportunity to get in. And like I said, you know, we people think things get away from you. They don't. You know, there's companies out there like now, Horizonte, Asia Met, massive sell-offs that are going to be, you know, decent in the long term, mid to long term. And people think you've missed the boat. You never miss the boat. There's always opportunity to get in. There's always sell-offs. You know, even the most aggressive stocks, there's always sell-offs. And it always happens. So, you know, I've often rushed in too much. And then I've had a pull back in the share price. And I've had to average down. I think, oh, I'm going to sort of firepower to average down here without going over 10%. So I think it's, you know, you should always look at, you know, just edging in slowly and then being a bit more patient, you know, and let news come out. Let it de-risk the story a little bit and, you know, do that, you know. But I'm not going to reveal what they are because...
Okay.
It's, you know...
It's personal.
Yeah, it'll move the market, you know.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, right, okay. Good.
Anything else? I know you're off now. You said I can't do off now. Why off now? You're busy.
I've got quite a lot going on, yeah.
Yes, yes. The missus haven't forgiven you for upsetting her. She's really annoyed. Really annoyed with you.
Well, is that because the BT thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Is she more upset with me than you?
It's debatable. Yes, no, she's more upset. She's still talking to me. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Unlucky.
Anything else happening, Steve? Anything? Some good views, good response on the live thing last week. I thought, you know, it's had about over 1,000 views. I think we need to get into what's that thing? I was looking at. Oh, do you know what? Drama podcasts are massive, aren't they? Who done it?
Are
they? Yeah.
What are you considering that for the podcast?
Well, I think we should kill someone. I think we should kill someone and then let people try and find out who it is. One of the three of us. You know,
you know that I'm going to be the victim.
No, don't mean kill one of us, Steve. It's obvious. If one of us dies, then you've narrowed down the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you listen to any of that stuff? Because apparently it's massive with women, these whodunit podcasts. They're massive, though. The figures they get are crazy, aren't they?
Hold on. Do you listen to any of that? Apparently, it's massive with women.
I was reading that women love these whodunit, these real life unsolved murders,
you've just been listening to Five Live, and that's what they were saying on it.
Yeah, well, I do listen to Five. I didn't just make this up on top of my head, Steve. Yes, I've listened to Five Live, but it's very interesting as to why women like them, and there's almost a sense of fear. And they want justice to be done and all this stuff. And they've got the girls' podcast. They just talk about them. They play them out and just talk about them. That's a podcast.
Oh, okay.
And it's massive. Massive, man.
Oh, okay. Well, they're podcasts about drama or about real life stories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, I just want to mention Tuple. I think people should look into Tuple. I know he's had a bit of people hit the stock because of a massive discounted fundraise. They raised 2.2 million, which is now pretty much the market cap is what? The market cap is. Hang on, the market cap is 2.4 million. They raised 2.2 million back in September, right? They've done so many new deals. Unbelievable. They had 150 new contracts signed for their telecoms business in October. The first week, 115 businesses signed up with Tuple in the first week of October alone, right? So that's a record they've done, and the momentum continues. And they said this fundraise will take us through to cash flow positive. I mean, what's the issue here then? They're valued little
market cap of 2.5 million.
Yeah, and then they're valued little above cash. Same with Oriel Resources. They've got cash. They've projects and what's going on is not pretty much not valued. You know, so they've got cash anyway. So that's basically it. So I forgot to mention that. I think people hate it because that discounted fundraise. I had a nasty email from someone because I said I bought some. And because apparently he was a holder and he was obviously diluted and massive discount. Just went on. I had paragraphs of just abuse. No, it's from the missus, sorry. That was from the missus. No. Yeah. It actually wasn't. It was from a guy who said, you know, a guy just slagging me off, saying I was...
Abusing
me for promoting it. Because I promoted... I said I bought in after the fundraise. And but the thing is, I hated stock. It's like the market, you know? Yeah. Amazing how fast fear of losing out turns into fear of missing out. And everyone just piles back in like crazy. Anyway.
Sorry about that email. I got a bit carried away.
Yeah. Well, you should say sorry to the missus, not me. That's all she was after.
You got a lot of making up to do. The wedding first, not going to his wedding.
Oh, yeah.
This. Wow.
Yeah. On top of everything else.
I'll do it all in one go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all she wanted was a sorry. That's what I'm just saying. Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Right, that's it.
I'm not apologising for, but okay. Sorry.
Is that sarcastic? Sorry, I didn't help on the night. You just sorry. That is what that is what my 5-year-old kid does. Sorry. You know.
I am like a 5-year-old child.
You are. Yes.
I'm okay with it.
I expect a big bouquet of flowers and a big card. And for her too. Right, lads, have a nice weekend. Bye-bye.
Cheers, bye.
Bye-bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.